that happens in life can happen in a show. You can make them laugh, you can make them cry. Anything, anything can go.
Welcome to your weekend. This is Weekend Showcase, your North State Arts Magazine. I'm Tom Kinney. Today we visit Chico's Blue Room Theater to hear from the director and a couple of the cast members from the troupe's new original stage adaptation of A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens. A holiday favorite, but a story that still has a lot to say about the responsibility of the financially well-off to not neglect the poorer members of the community. Also on today's program, we'll be talking with Marilyn Souza, owner of the Vagabond Rose Gallery. For 25 years, Souza has celebrated and supported Chico area artists and their works. And she's had a particular interest in art prints because of Souza's association earlier in her career with renowned printmaker Janet Turner. That's coming up over the next half hour here on Weekend Showcase. Stay tuned. First, here's Brian Maul with the North State Arts Calendar.
Tonight, at Redding's Cascade Theater, there's a classic film party. See the timeless holiday favorite, It's a Wonderful Life. Before the screening of this ultimate Christmas film directed by Frank Capra, there'll be live music and dancing, a Christmas sweater contest, best and ugliest, and a visit from Santa. The party starts at 6 o'clock tonight. The film starts at 7. Next Wednesday in Reading at the Cascade Theater, a holiday tradition returns to the stage, A Celtic Christmas. It's an evening of stories, music, and dance that celebrates Irish culture and the spirit of Christmas. This Celtic celebration starts at 7:30. In Red Bluff tonight at the State Theater, the North State Symphony, under the baton of Maestro Scott Seaton, presents a holiday concert, filled with a variety of sacred and popular Christmas music and sing-along carols. It all starts in about 4.5 hours from now at 7:30. Tomorrow, this holiday concert moves to Chico. Hear the North State Symphony at St. John's Episcopal Church, 2341 Floral Avenue, starting at 7:30. Sunday, you can hear the concert in Reading at All Saints Episcopal Church, 2150 Benton Drive, where it starts at 4 o'clock. The Orland Arts Center has photographs from the Shutterbug Photography Group with the exhibit This Wondrous World. The center's open Tuesday through Saturday, 1 to 6. Chico Theater Company ends its run of Every Christmas Story Ever Told, and Then Some. It's a fast-paced trip through every Christmas tale you've ever heard, with lots of audience participation. Showtimes are tonight and tomorrow at 7:30, with a final performance Sunday at 2. Our area has a new dance company, the North State Ballet. The troupe presents Into the Wardrobe, an original full-length ballet inspired by the C.S. Lewis novel, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. Starting tonight, 70 dancers take the stage at the Chico Center for the Performing Arts on the edge of the Pleasant Valley High campus. Only 5 performances, tonight, tomorrow, and Sunday at 6 o'clock, with matinees tomorrow and Sunday at 1. The Chico Art Center continues its winter gift show featuring original creations, pottery, paintings, jewelry, and more. The center's open 7 days a week, noon to 4. Stories 5 is the show now at 1078 Gallery, bringing together artists with strong ties to Chico. Gallery hours, 12:30 to 5:30, Thursday through Saturday. In Paradise, the North State Ballet stages the seasonal favorite, The Nutcracker. The Sugar Plum Fairy and all the other magical characters pirouette across the stage of the Paradise Performing Arts Center. The ballet starts at 7:15 tonight and tomorrow night. Plus, there's a matinee at 2:15 tomorrow. In Yuba City, the Acting Company ends its run of Christmas Bells, a lighthearted comedy drama. Tonight and tomorrow, the play begins at 8 o'clock, and the final performance is Sunday at 2. Also at Yuba City's Acting Company this weekend, The Best Gift Ever. This play for the holidays is performed by kids, for kids and their families. Only two more chances to see this Christmas comedy, both tomorrow, at 1 o'clock and again at 3. That's the calendar for this week. Thanks for listening. English playwright Noel Coward was born on this date. When your relatives and guests get on your nerves during the holidays, remember what Coward said. I like long walks, especially when they're taken by people who annoy me.
I'm at the Blue Room Theater, and they are doing Dickens' A Christmas Carol, and it's a new adaptation. We're talking now to the director of the production, Amber Miller. Amber, what did you discover about this well-known story when you were working on it in this new stage adaptation?
It's been told many times, but the story is just so true, and it's just very apt.
Did you think a lot about the income disparity that we have in this country when you were dealing with this about poor people and rich people and how the rich people don't always understand poor people?
It is very timeless. The parallels of what was happening in Dickensian London at this time is very similar to what's going on now. The message is still as true and as important as those times.
You had an interesting presence with the vagrant people.
You enjoy it and you love the message, but you also want to make it your own. Roger and I were talking about what was important to us. Gritty London, the poverty, all that was very important. We both wanted to have music in the piece, but wanted to keep it kind of like a tapestry, organic. I was thinking about how to make the story really fluid, really theatrical. The idea of having players that are multicasted, that was a big thing. I wanted the leanest cast I could have. Then who are these players? And that's when I kind of started thinking about the Whitechapel area, the East End slum, on the side, but always present.
It felt like there was also some sort of spiritual quality to those vagrant people.
One foot in the human world and one foot in the spirit world. I wanted them to add texture to Marley and the three visitations, the three ghosts. They are with them helping Scrooge on his journey. They feel all the cold and discomfort of the human world, but they're tapped in with that spirit world too. So that was definitely a decision, yeah.
Describe your experience presenting this story and working with this great cast that you have to bring it to life at the Blue Room Theater.
This is one of the more challenging shows I worked with, just in the sense that when people don't leave the stage, transitions become a part of the show. You have to have those transitions be interesting, fluid, almost like a choreographed piece, adding the music. There was a lot of layers and elements.
We've been talking with Amber Miller, who's the director of A Christmas Carol at the Blue Room Theater. The star and also the person who adapted this from the story by Charles Dickens. This is Roger Montalbano. Roger, have you always had a fondness for this story, or did you kind of discover it anew when you made this adaptation?
Oh, no. You know, we talk about the movie, the 1953 Christmas Carol with Alistair Sim. It's a black and white British production. I saw that as a child, and I was very touched by it. Subsequently, I read the book and saw they were actually adhering to the true Dickensian story, the poverty, the sadness, the bitterness people carry with them, and then the backstory of Scrooge being not just an old cantankerous person for no particular reason at all, as you see in some of the other movies and TV adaptations of the story. It's not just about some old man who miraculously one day discovers life is better if he's not mean. It's because he had a very, very sad childhood, sent away by his father, who didn't love him, only loved his sister. And then when she died, it was like he just got cold towards the world. And one thing after another, just like the Pink Floyd's song, it's just another brick in the wall for him. And he just really walled himself away from humanity. No, I was touched by it at quite an early age. Actually, it's part of my being. It wasn't hard to adapt it because I already knew it. And it wasn't too hard to learn the lines because I knew the lines beforehand pretty much.
It's kind of a grueling experience that Scrooge goes through.
It is. It's a grueling experience. As I've gotten older and I have regrets and I look back at my life and I don't know how I would react if, like, poor Ebenezer gets this gigantic mirror shoved in his face. At times, it's like a funhouse mirror. Everything is distorted, and he's trying to remember, and it touches upon parts of him that he hasn't felt for a long, long time. And I know that's true. I recently took a trip to Europe, and I had an illness when I was in Lisbon. I was bedridden for a number of days. Pretty serious stuff. And I was laying in bed, and my mind went back to a lot of remembrances of my past, and I was like forced to see things as Scrooge was. Yeah, it's really a torment. The other thing that just happened is my little sister passed away last August, and we had already agreed to do this before that happened, so it wasn't like I was trying to do some grief counseling to myself, but that in fact has happened, that I was able to use that as a positive thing in the portrayal.
Do you feel an epiphany every performance when you go through that redemption at the end?
Yeah, I think that's the most important thing. And, it, you know, it gets kind of comical. It's such a departure from the way he was. And then all of a sudden he's dancing around and stuff. But I think the epiphany shows more, and not that silly stuff, but in the way he, when he sees his nephew Fred, he asks forgiveness for the way he behaved, and with Bob Cratchit at the end, realizing that the people that should be close to him in his life, he's mistreated for a long, long time.
Been talking with Roger Montalbano, Scrooge himself, from the Blue Room's adaptation of A Christmas Carol. This is a ghost story, and here's the man who plays all the ghosts, Kelly Houston. So what's it like, Kelly, to play so many different spiritual beings, one after another?
Well, it's quite a wonderful experience, actually. I've never done any of the parts in this play before. It was just, I thought, a great idea. You know, the quick changes and everything and the way everything worked. I really enjoyed doing it.
Well, describe each of your characters, from Marley's ghost through the three Christmas ghosts.
Okay, well, of course, Marley, he appears in scene three, and he's got his chains, his fetters. It's a huge ball of chain, and he's hunched over, and he comes and gives warnings to Ebenezer and tells him about the three spirits. The first is Christmas past. I lead Ebenezer through a series of past occurrences.
Describe the personality of Christmas past as opposed to the other Christmas spirits.
Christmas past is more officious, I would say, is more of an authoritarian figure. Christmas present is the party guy, and he's, come on, we're going to show you what's going on. You know, there's goodness in this world, and you're not looking at it. Let's see if we can see that. And of course, Christmas future is the specter of death. He has no lines, which saved me a lot of memorizing.
Kelly, you do come in at the end of the play. I guess it's as yourself or as a general spirit, and you kind of wrap things up, right?
Right, yeah. You know, after he has tied up all the ends with his nephew's family and with his office with Bob Cratchit and everything, we come in and we say that he became better than he ever was in life and always knew how to keep Christmas well. Tiny Tim got well, and everybody just has a big old time, and it's time to sleep in heavenly peace.
We're in the final week of this. What's it been like for all the other performances, sharing it with an audience?
That is the best part. I mean, we've been rehearsing now for 6 weeks or so, and to have an audience, I work a lot better with an audience than in rehearsal. It has been wonderful. It's been well received. Houses are getting larger as we're getting closer to Christmas itself. I'm just now starting to settle into it to see it as a complete picture. But that's the way it is with me for any play.
and you get to sing a little bit along with the Vagrant Chorus. What's it like really sharing all those classic Christmas carols?
I pulled the songs. Addison did all of the music stuff, but he didn't have a lot of experience with Christmas songs. And I've been singing in choirs for 50 years or so. Oh, more, 60. But let's not get into that. So I just gave him a whole bunch of songs. And Amber, in taking Roger's adaptation and figuring out how she wanted to direct it, she would say, oh, I want a mournful song here. I want something here and something that. So between the three or four of us, we came up with that. And I think Addison has done just a beautiful, beautiful job of taking care of the transitions and making everything just operate so smoothly.
Yeah, and beautiful live guitar playing. It makes it very resonant, I think. Kelly, sum up for us the experience that you think audiences will have if they go to A Christmas Carol at the Blue Room in this final weekend.
They will have their personal experience, you know, and most people have seen at least one production of this or one movie. They're familiar with the story. But I think there's a certain amount of realism that comes through and will come through for the individual.
We've been talking with the cast, and we also talked with the director of A Christmas Carol, now at the Blue Room Theater. Let's join our visual art expert, Dolores, as she talks with one of the leaders in the Chico art community, Marilyn Souza. Souza celebrates and displays all kinds of artwork in her gallery, but she has a particular interest in art prints, ever since her early association with Chico's famous printmaker, Janet Turner.
This is Dolores Mitchell, and today I'm speaking with Marilyn Souza, who is the co-owner with her husband of Vagabond Rose. That's at 236 Main Street in downtown Chico, a specialty shop of custom framing and fine art display.
I have been really dealing with art for 30 years. Considering the time that I actually went into the gallery work in Gridley.
I'm also going to be speaking with Marilyn as a historian of the whole art community here in Chico. She's also a particular supporter of printmakers and received 4 years ago the Turner Prize from the Turner Print Museum.
I still find that there's very little knowledge of what a fine art print is. There are many ways to do it besides carving a linoleum block. There are etching plates. Most of it involves running it through a press to remove the ink from the plate into the paper, something I think very few people are really meant to do.
Marilyn, tell us a little bit about your early interest in printmaking here in Chico.
The first time I was aware of fine art prints was when Janet opened her gallery at Laxon Auditorium, and I thought I must know her because I had left Chico in the spring of 59, and I thought, well, she's there, I must know who she is. So I went up and realized that I had never seen her before and met her. Went to the new gallery and was quite enthused about what this original printmaking was all about. Many years later, she came and asked me to show her work, and then I really got involved with what the original printmaking process was. I think it's one of the best kept secrets in the world is what goes into making a fine art print, because it is very, very complicated.
You were telling me a student, a young man, came into your gallery and asked why a particular Janet Turner print was so expensive. It's just a print, just a reproduction, he seemed to think.
I said, how much time do you have? Because it takes a lot to get someone who's that far away from an original print to get the idea of having every single color and every single line put onto that paper by hand, and not with a brush, but with very exquisite printing presses. And Janet most often, not always, but most often, carved in a huge linoleum block the image that she meant to show you. After that was finished, she would roll ink over that linoleum block, run it through a press, so you had this black and white line image, and they are so intricate, it's very hard to believe someone has that much patience. Then the color has to go on through silk screens. She lays a piece of silk over that first printing and squeegees color through that silk, and she's already put material on the silk that allows the color only to go in really specific spaces. Then she hangs that up to dry, because that's just one color, and she will repeat this over and over, redoing a silk, and sometimes it's just a speck of color that's allowed to come through. You have to think of everything backwards. She will hang each one to dry, and sometimes they could be as many as 29 colors. This is very, very intricate, and I wish people understood it better, because you would appreciate her work more.
Probably the young man was thinking of reproductive prints, which is an entirely different process. It involves photographing, usually an original painting, then using mechanical processes to create the reproduction. CSUC's Janet Turner Print Gallery is just an absolute gem of a collection. And for 10 years, you were on that board. You did receive 4 years ago the Turner Prize. You were one of the most prized possessions because you were a fundraiser, and very few people can successfully do that. What's your secret?
I don't know. I seem to be kind of a creative mind, and if I get something in my mind I want to solve, I think about it for a long time. I think about it in the middle of the night. What would work? And then all of a sudden you get a little glow of an idea, and then you start talking to other people about it. You say, I think we can do this. You go out and you find your space and you find somebody to give you a free venue. I certainly didn't do it by myself, but I seemed to be one who was always finding a way to go out and get money for the Turner.
Marilyn, let's backtrack a bit and talk about how you originally got into the art field.
I'll backtrack a little farther than that. When I took an elementary school art class from Ken Morrow, he continued to say to me, Marilyn, you should be painting. Marilyn, you should change your major. I just discarded it immediately. I was already on track to be a teacher, and that was that. I got into the arts in Gridley because we had in Gridley, he is now deceased, George Dehoff, who was becoming quite well known, showing in San Francisco. He remains to this day the artist that I feel has the widest breadth in imagination. And his skill level is probably second to none as well. He did like using the line, so that was always present in his work. He didn't do impressionist work. But we started showing his work at the Opera House in Gridley, and it soon became apparent that this art gallery was going to blossom. So we thought our original name, S-Claus Limited, wasn't going to take us very far as a gallery, so we changed it to the name of a painting that he had not yet completed. He gave me a list of titles, and we chose The Vagabond Rose. It is a painting that hangs in our gallery. It's a watercolor, and I have a huge collection of George Dehoff paintings. That's what got me started. Then through him, I met Janet Salcasa, Pat Babcock, and Waif Mullins. Those are all people that I showed while we were in Gridley.
Well, I think one wonderful thing about you, Marilyn, is that you continue to inspire artists. I was just speaking with Charlotte Sweetland, who was so enthusiastic about your willingness to look at her work. She felt she was a, kind of a beginner, edging her way into showing her art. And you were so supportive. She was just thrilled. She felt her desire to be an artist was going to be fulfilled because of you.
Well, that's quite wonderful, and I have to say it's been delightful to work with Charlotte. She's one of the most appreciative people you would ever want to meet, and my artists have always been appreciative, I know, for the space that we give them. That's one other thing probably that I have going for me. I always say I was a preschool teacher before my kids were in school, and I then went into elementary school. If you've worked with preschools day in and day out, you know you have to be flexible, and I think that's what you have to be with artists. And sometimes they do things, and you're kind of shaking your head and thinking, is that going to work? But you don't try to move into their space, because that is their space. And I do appreciate the creative nature of all the people I've worked with over 25 years, 30 years. I like their kind of, I don't know, odd way of thinking sometimes.
Well, thank you so much, Marilyn Souza, for being such a strong supporter of Chico artists and Beyond Chico for 25 years.
And that's Weekend Showcase for this week. We'll be back next Friday at 3 o'clock. If you ever miss this program at its regular broadcast time, you can hear it online anytime after 3:30 Friday at mynspr.org. As always, we encourage you to enjoy the arts in your community. For Weekend Showcase, I'm Tom Kinney. Weekend Showcase is a production of North State Public Radio.